This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao, in for Frank Stachow. President Donald Trump is in the United Kingdom today, and his visit has gotten awkward. In an interview published in a British tabloid yesterday, he blasted UK Prime Minister Theresa May and said that her political rival Boris Johnson would make an excellent prime minister. He then held a joint press conference with May this morning to do some damage control. Trump's visit to London comes after a tense NATO summit in Brussels. He criticized Germany's relationship with Russia and shared concerns about how much member states are paying on defense. So what does all of this say about Trump's strategy for foreign diplomacy? Political junkie Ken Rudin is here to break it down for us. Welcome back, Ken.
Hello, Anita. And I love the words, Trump's strategy with foreign policy. I mean, what he did this week at the NATO conference is exactly what he did last month at the G7 conference when he caused dissension among the members, criticized Canadian Prime Minister Trudeau. He just seems to enjoy making the story about Donald Trump.
So he has mixed messages. People are calling it confrontational diplomacy. What do you think the strategy is behind this particular set of tactics?
Well, I'm not sure. Again, I'm not sure if strategy is the right word. If you're a conspiracy theorist, you could say, well, what he's doing is doing Vladimir Putin's bidding, and that is causing dissension within NATO, criticizing Germany for the oil pipeline, for the natural gas pipeline to Russia, to criticize Theresa May about her Brexit strategy, praising Theresa May's top rival, Boris Johnson, the former foreign minister. So basically, you know, if you have the NATO allies fighting with each other, basically it's doing what Vladimir Putin would like to see, the dissension within NATO. Another way of looking at it is just as this is Donald Trump being Donald Trump, that the story needs to be about him. And in fairness to Trump, he's long complained the fact that NATO members don't pay their fair share, in his words, for their defense. Barack Obama was also critical of the allies doing that as well. So I mean, who knows why he's doing it? But clearly, it's exactly what U.S. allies feared from the beginning. What would happen? He would cause dissension within NATO, and then go next week on to Helsinki, meeting Vladimir Putin, and everything would be very chummy with him.
So some of Trump's team has had to clean up a little bit behind him this week with his various comments. How is the Republican base responding to everything Trump's been up to this week?
Well, as we've seen with so many issues, the Republican base stays aligned and united behind President Trump. We see it with members of Congress. We see it on social media. We see it with his base. And basically, when the president will criticize Europe, which is fine with his base, when he talks about how much immigration is hurting the culture of Europe, well, this fits in perfectly with his base. So it may upset the State Department. It may upset the Foreign Service regulars who believe in international diplomacy. But as far as his base goes, I think they're eating it up.
So big news that could have an impact on the United States. Trump announced his nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court, Judge Brett Kavanaugh. What stood out to you about this candidate choice?
Well, of course, the president talked about at least four people on the list. Kavanaugh was hardly the most right-wing of it, most conservative of them. But one thing that it does show, and this is not a criticism of Kavanaugh or even Trump, it's just reality about Supreme Court politics. And that is, last year when we basically traded Antonin Scalia for Neil Gorsuch, it was almost like a push. You're replacing one conservative, the late Justice Scalia, or another conservative justice, Neil Gorsuch. This one, you're giving up Anthony Kennedy for Brett Kavanaugh, and that is a change. It's not a sea change, and we could talk about that should Ruth Bader Ginsburg leave the court and see what her replacement would be like. But Anthony Kennedy was known as the swing justice on the Supreme Court. His critical votes, in favor of same-sex marriage and affirmative action and gay rights. So while Anthony Kennedy was indeed a conservative, he still voted in favor of those issues that really helped moderates and the Democrats. You know that Brett Kavanaugh is not going to have that kind of voting record. He is more conservative, and so maybe there was a nominal 5-4 conservative majority on the court with Anthony Kennedy. With Kennedy gone now and likely Brett Kavanaugh replacing him, although there will be spirited opposition to Kavanaugh's nomination, it'll be a much more conservative court.
So he has a record of around 300 opinions. You've mentioned a few of his significant rulings. What do you think are going to be the most contentious points during his confirmation hearing?
Clearly, the decision that is really focused, that the opposition will focus on the most, is Kavanaugh in the past. And he said this Kavanaugh has said this in the past, that the president cannot be indicted or interfered with as president. So, in other words, when his strong feelings about executive power fits in with Donald Trump, given the fact that more and more you're hearing that Robert Mueller and Rod Rosenstein and others in the Justice Department are getting closer and closer regarding this possible collusion with Russia investigation. And so Kavanaugh has made it clear that he feels that the president is not indictable on this issue. And if that's the case, if ultimately this goes to the Supreme Court, if the case about potential Russian collusion with Russia goes to the Supreme Court, Brett Kavanaugh's views on executive power is going to be a clear issue.
So we've heard that a lot of people are watching Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska. Who are some of the other big players who you think we should be paying attention to in the lead up to the hearing?
Well, before we get rid of Murkowski and Collins, the two of them who are pro-choice Republicans who voted basically to kill the opposition, you know, to preserve the Affordable Care Act last year, along with John McCain. But they have said nice things, complimentary things about Brett Kavanaugh. So all of NARAL's dreams, and they've been putting up ads in Maine and Alaska, you know, for all of what NARAL has been hoping to do to persuade Collins and Murkowski to vote no, I don't think that's going to happen. At the same time, there are Democrats running for re-election this year in solidly red states, most notably Joe Donnelly of Indiana, Joe Manchin of West Virginia, and Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota. If they, you know, there's a lot of pressure on them to vote in favor. In other words, conservatives are saying you should vote to confirm Kavanaugh's nomination. But Chuck Schumer and the Democrats are pleading with them to stay united. And basically, their re-election chances may hang in the balance of what they decide to do with the Kavanaugh nomination. So there was tremendous amount of pressure on those three Democrats, maybe Claire McCaskill of Missouri as well, John Tester of Montana. These are Democrats who have to know that their conservative electorate may very well want Brett Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court, but they know that liberal groups and Democratic groups will be pressuring them very seriously to vote no.
So this may have really changed how things are going to shape up in the run-up to the midterm elections and the messages that these candidates will be giving.
That's absolutely true. I mean, obviously, the Democrats need two seats, a net gain of two seats to get a majority to put Chuck Schumer as majority leader in the Senate. And, of course, if the Democrats control the Senate, they could vote down the next Trump Supreme Court nominee because there is no more filibuster anymore. But at the same time, there's a lot of pressure from conservative groups on these senators to vote yes because they feel that they were making the case that if they vote no, they'll hear it from voters in November. This has become, and probably to the Republicans' benefit, this has become a major issue in the midterm election, something that the Democrats wish would not the case.
One more question left, Ken. We know we spoke about Trump's visit to Vladimir Putin scheduled for next week in Helsinki. How do you think he is set up for this meeting based on everything that's happened this past week?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure if you're going to get headlines out of this, but the fact is, it comes out of, as I said earlier, it comes after, in the aftermath of dissension we're hearing in the NATO meeting, the fact that Trump has caused disunity with Germany, with Britain, with the NATO allies. And, of course, this fits into the Putin thing, but Putin game plan. Now, if you want to make the case that Donald Trump is going to stand up to Putin and say, why did you interfere, or did you interfere in the U.S. elections, and why did you annex Crimea and things like that? There's been no evidence so far. The president has a history, at least we've seen in the last couple of months, if not the last year and a half, of criticizing Democratic allies in Britain, in France, in Canada, in Mexico, in Germany, while at the same time supporting and saying laudatory things about authoritarian figures like Putin in Russia, like Kim in North Korea, like Erdogan in Turkey. So you know, for all the criticism you're hearing from Trump with our allies in Europe and elsewhere,
He's not criticized Putin in the past. I suspect you're not going to have that as well. It could be the kind of love fest we saw between Putin and Kim in Singapore with Kim of North Korea.
Ken Rudin is a political junkie. Ken, thanks so much.
Anita, thank you so much.
Just ahead, the World Cup comes to a close this Sunday. We'll talk with a historian who's written a love letter to soccer. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.